Hello, this is the Order of the Mustard Seed podcast, and I'm your host, Jill Weber. Well, welcome everybody. Jill Weber here, the OMS podcast. And I'm here with my friend David, who I met at Waverly Abbey. We'll just say welcome, David.
Hello, and thank you for having me here.
I remember one of the first times I met you, David. We were working in the garden at Waverly Abbey, and then all of a sudden, somebody in a recumbent bicycle was like cycling over our grass and cycling over to the garden. And I had met you, I think, once or twice before, but you kind of cycled near, and I looked up, and it was you. And I just thought that was a lovely encounter, unexpected encounter in the garden, you and your bicycle.
Well, with regards to cycling on the grass, I play the gimpy leg card for all it's worth, so that that's my excuse. But, and it's a recumbent trike, three wheels, for balance.
Yeah. Amazing. So David, you're British. Where are you from? And
If you came out of Waverley Abbey and went up the hill, you could turn right onto the Pilgrim's Way and take you all the way to my hometown in Dover, in Kent. So it will lead you through Canterbury and then down to the coast at Dover in Kent is where I was was brought up originally. Mm-hmm. And then just when I was about 20, I joined the army and in the medical corps, and that was for the next 22 years. And so I do go back down to Kent quite regularly to visit, but my home's near Church Crookham, not so very far from Waverley.
Yeah, we see you lots here on site, which is really lovely. So what year did you join the Order of the Mustard Seed, David?
I actually joined I took my vows in November last year. Yeah. So I'm relatively new to the organisation, but obviously there was the year of preparation prior to that, and then the year before that was the Ancient Paths course, which is, I think, under, is it 24/7 or the MAS Road we're organising?
So Ancient Paths was a course that we, the Waverley Abbey community, was running here on site. So yeah, you came through that. That was kind of like intro to Order of the Mustard Seed, just giving you a little taster of the practices and new monasticism.
Yeah, and that was very formative in my spiritual development and understanding, but it was also a very, very useful lead into my decision to apply for the year of season of preparation.
Yeah. So I'm curious. So why? I mean, coming out of the army and such. Why a missional monastic order?
Well, the army. In fact, it's for me. It's almost ancient history now. Although I did 22 years, I've been out significantly longer than that. So I did 18 years in the NHS because I was a physiotherapist in the army, in the medical corps. So I then came out and did 18 years in the NHS. Mm-hmm. And then just before my 60th birthday, I had a fairly profound stroke which affected my right-hand side of my body. And so the next so that led to my retirement, and the next, 9 years, nearly 10 years now, have been a journey becoming reorientated to a different way of living and with different goals and aspirations, which I had not anticipated.
And so that reorientation, that journey, led you more of an inward journey? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, very much so. It because I was medical and was in the within therapies, virtually every other person I knew was a therapist of some kind, or a doctor or a nurse, and so I had over and above just how amazing the NHS was in terms of rehabilitation. But with the best will in the world, after about 18 months, you fall off the front page of the news. You're not necessarily, you know, the most interesting person in the world anymore. And you suddenly think, wow, this is much better than I was when I started. But boys, oh boys, it's not what I used to do previously. I, for example, thinking about, and we'll come to pilgrimage, I just finished cycling from Winchester to Lindisfarne over a course of three holidays, which is about 500 miles. And I just about finished that prior to my stroke. So, you know, that's the sort of, that was the sort of aspiration I had prior to my stroke. And now, 18 months, 2 years later, it's very much more circumscribed. So I had to come to terms with that. And it wasn't always easy. Mm. I've got some very godly friends over and above, you know, my wife, Sue, who...
Who's wonderful, by the way.
Who is
Love
wonderful.
Sue.
Yeah, let's hear it for Sue as I'm being recorded. We went away on a retreat weekend in Sussex, this other couple. They got some Airbnb, and we just went away and we got a book by Margaret Silf on she's a Jesuit type Ignatian.
Ignatian spirituality.
Yeah.
Which of her books do you remember?
It was
the name?
The Landmarks.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that was the beginning of a really powerful journey of reorientation, goal setting, et cetera, et cetera. It was, you know, people, when you think of healing, you think about, you know, the beggar at the gate of leaping and silver and gold have I none and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, that would be nice to have that sort of healing, but I certainly can testify to deep healing spiritually. Mm-hmm. through that journey. So that was very powerful. And then another colleague who is in fact my spiritual director for the course and is a Waverley trained counsellor, in fact, is my spiritual director for the Order of the Mustard Seed and had been for the Ancient Paths as well. And so we revisited the Silf's book and went into it a lot more detail than you could possibly do in a weekend. So that's been a really interesting journey.
Mm.
But the real insight is the Spirit of God is within you. I came across this concept some time ago, the God immanent and the God transcendent.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was on the cliffs years and years ago, and because visiting my folks, and so I went up on the cliffs above Dover just for a prayer time and look around, and it was all very atmospheric and the sea boiling around and on the rocks, etc., etc. So I was looking out and praying, and I suddenly sense a prompt that God was saying to me, I'm not out there. I'm not, you know, just beyond the horizon out towards France. I'm inside you. Mm. You know, it's this thin place type concept. And ever since then, I've every time I've started looking out, and, you know, God is out there,
yeah.
You know, absolutely, you know, the Psalm 8 and all that sort of thing. But it's really, as Christians, it's this God within is a very powerful truth that isn't always that easy to capture or, you know, buy into.
Yeah, to kind of apprehend and to live into an awareness of that from moment to moment. Is that what you're
saying? Yes, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I then read a book. It's a novel called The Gentleman in Moscow, mm-hmm. by Amor Towles. It's quite a recent one. And what it's about is a book you're familiar with?
No.
Okay. It's
I'm going to look it up and get it now.
Yeah. Well, it's about a Russian nobleman at the time of the Russian Revolution who was fell foul of the authorities, obviously, because you know they were communists. He was an aristocrat. But fortunately for him, he had written a revolutionary poem, which had been well received at the time of the revolution. And it wasn't that they couldn't bring themselves to actually execute him. So they said, right, we'll spare your life, but you must live the rest of your life at your own expense in a hotel in Moscow, a reasonable, well, posh, what we would say, a posh hotel.
Yeah.
So from the age, from his early middle age, suddenly his, whereas before he travelled all over the world and been a bit of a dilettante and socialised, suddenly his horizons were the hotel. Wow. As opposed to the whole world.
Yeah, yeah.
So he was a very phlegmatic, gentlemanly, a character who thought, well, I'll just have to come to terms with this. So he made the most of his life. But then at a certain point, after a couple of years, he met this young girl who, for other reasons, was in the same, obliged to live in the same conditions. But she was a feisty, imaginative young sprig and explored the whole hotel from top to bottom. She got to know the cooks and the chambermen, everybody. And he suddenly thought, you know what? There's a world in this hotel that I'm completely and utterly oblivious for. And there's a wonderful passage where he suddenly realised, wow, she understands this hotel, not just as a hotel, but the whole block. And then, do you know what? She knows the whole of Moscow. Wow, she knows the whole of Russia in this hotel.
Wow.
And she knows the whole world just through the people she meets and the experiences.
Astonishing and beautiful.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. So I thought, that's been my journey, is if I can't go out, and a couple of months ago I went to Cyprus on holiday. I'm not saying I'm housebound or anything like that. Day before yesterday, I cycled 30 miles on my recumbent trike. So, but it's still much more circumscribed than it used to be.
Yeah.
So, but I felt I could learn from this, but in the spiritual. So, which brings me on to the pilgrimage.
Yeah, so I think what's really interesting when you introduced yourself, you identified where you lived on a pilgrim journey.
Yes.
Right? And so how long has the concept of pilgrimage sort of loomed large in your vision and in your imagination?
I think as a child, my mum would pack us out at the front door and say, don't come back till it's dark. We were encouraged to walk, and my mum would come as well, and my dad was very much into the outdoors as well. So, but the concept of pilgrimage, in the late 90s, I went to Spurgeon's College. I came out of the army and I did a year at Spurgeon's College, day release for a year. And doing pastoral studies and working, as a physio the rest of the time. And I was introduced to the concept of Celtic spirituality.
Yeah.
And I just went bonkers on it, I think, wow, because my mum's from the northeast, from quite close to Lindisfarne.
Yeah,
so
the
I've got
Northumbria area.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Just to the south of it. The town she lived in, Hartlepool, is St. Hilda was the abbess there, mm-hmm. of who later went to Whitby Abbey. So, you know, that was very much, and Durham's just up the road as well. So I was brought up in my summer holidays, although I'm from the south, so that's where my summer holidays were. So I do, you know, I felt in, you know, I did know that Celtic vibe. So I just loved the whole thing. And of course, pilgrimage is a big part of that. And so I started from about 2000 onwards. I suddenly thought, I'm going to go on a pilgrimage. And my elder brother, he arranged, this is long before my stroke, obviously, we walked from Melrose in the central lowlands of Scotland out to Lindisfarne on the Cuthbert's Way,
yeah.
which Pete Gregg did as a leg of his one last year. Was it last year?
Cuthbert's Way.
Yeah. We, having walked from, you know, the from Iona. So I then, I just went on from there. In the end, with another friend, we, over a course of six holidays, we cycled from Canterbury to Rome in on the what's called the Via Francigena, I think it's pronounced, the Way of the French down to... I was... Oh, a number of... There's a, the Saint's Way across the Cornwall, which links various holy wells and sites where they used to go from Ireland to the continent for the Santiago pilgrimage trail. So yeah, it. But then after a while, you think, how is a pilgrimage different to a holiday?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you a pilgrim or are you a tourist?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So, and in the end, it's not a protected title. It's not like champagne or Cornish pastiche. If you want to call yourself a pilgrim, you can call yourself a pilgrim, and yeah. nobody can stop you. And whether you go to Graceland or, you know, Anfield or, you know, some other sporting arena. So I thought I need to be a little bit more definite of being able to know when I'm being a pilgrim and when I'm just going on holiday. So I came up with this definition, with this amalgamation from the pilgrimage is a journey out of the heart of darkness into the heart of God, which is the, and that speaks of transformation.
Hmm.
And I was very influenced by a book on about the four stages of gospel transformation. And you know, you've got the children of Israel in captivity, then they're in the desert,
yeah.
then they cross the Jordan, then they're in the promised land. So you've got the captivity, you've got the wandering in the wilderness, you've got the arrival at the Jordan, which they were able to cross, but then they occupy the land.
Yeah.
And so with the stages of pilgrimage, you have the holy longing, you have the pilgrim journey, you have the prayerful arrival, and you have the servant response.
Oh, I love that. It's beautiful. So holy longing, pilgrim journey,
Prayerful
arrival and holy response.
Servant response.
Servant response.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit more about those.
Well, after my stroke, and you can tell the amount I talk about my stroke, it has been a big thing yeah. to come to terms with. And although I would just say, testify, that I'm happier now in this last decade than I've ever been in my life, and I've never been unhappy in my life, but
wow.
I've been more fulfilled and it had a sense of purpose through the spiritual insights I've received and have been helped towards by some very, very godly people, is that one of these, a friend that I've done literally thousands of miles walking and cycling with, he thought, well, this won't do. He lives in Canterbury, actually.
Yeah.
So he arranged, he said, what you need you've got a gimpy leg now and you've staggered around like there's no get out, you need to just have a mini pilgrimage.
Yeah.
So I'll organise one across Canterbury for you. So we got dropped off in a church just on the outskirts. Do you know Canterbury at all?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you've got the West Gate, and just outside the West Gate, there's a church, which is where Henry II started his final approach of penance to the cathedral. So that's a really good place to start. Went through the West Gate, up the High Street, and to the cathedral, stopping for a coffee on the way and a sit down. I can't remember how far it was. I don't suppose it was much more than a mile.
Yeah.
But it was the equivalent of like 50 miles from a
pre-stroke.
Yeah.
Equivalent.
Yeah. Anyway, so managed to do that. Got to the cathedral, and if you when you get to the ticket office, you say I'm a pilgrim. They'll they'll give you a certificate, and they'll arrange for you to have some prayer time with the duty chaplain. So that's what we did, and he came over and said, "Hi, you know, I'm whoever he was, and let's tell me about your story." And I said, "Well, you know, I've had a stroke, blah blah," and I was absolutely beside myself with emotion. It was, you know, suddenly, you know, something was opening up that hadn't been there before and was now facilitated. So he said, "Well, you know, it's a great story," but he said, "You know, the most important thing about a pilgrimage is the return. You've had this experience which you found helpful, emotional, but Christianity is not about you exclusively. It's about community. So if you've received a gift, who are you going to give it to?"
Yeah.
And so that's where the idea for me of pilgrim response came from. So and from that point on, I've gone on developing this whole concept of pilgrimage, and being able to make it more accessible. And accessible in a variety of ways, other than just being able to go a long distance across the country.
Yeah. So that leads me to some of the virtual pilgrimages that you have developed. I'm wondering if talking about your Taizé pilgrimage is a good way to describe the kind of work that you've been doing, making pilgrimages accessible to people.
Yes, yeah, the Taizé, I did briefly visit Taizé one holiday driving, and we stayed in that vicinity. It's beautiful area and a most inspirational place to visit.
So for people who are maybe not from the UK or Europe, can you tell them what Taizé is?
Well, it's a new, I don't think they call themselves new monastic, but it would certainly fall into that category. It was a Eutherian pastor during the in the Second World War. He went to Burgundy, which is in central France, to help the Jews who were being shipped off and persecuted. So he set up this, I think he was just himself to start with, but then was expelled by the Nazis because of his involvement with the Jews, and then came back afterwards, and they basically settled in a farm there, and it developed into this Peace and Reconciliation Centre, and there's a community of them there, and people come from absolutely all over the world, thousands of them, a lot of young people. It's not really designed for people like myself. You know, you're very welcome, but it's youngsters. And they have this, if you like this sort of thing, they have this most haunting musicality. Yeah, it's just, I just loved it. and they have a lot of focus on silence and meditation. So I thought I'd like to go back there, but I'm not going to get there on a recumbent trike, you know. So I'll just...
It'd be hard to take the trike across the English Channel.
Well...
You'd need like big water wings.
Yeah, you would. Yeah, something like that. Yeah. You could go through the tunnel, I guess, but yeah. You get squashed by a train. Anyway, I decided to do it virtually. So I looked at the maps. It's about 600 miles. And if I do it from my own house in Hampshire, so that will be a good place to start from. And so every time I went out on a trike, I measured how far I'd gone and then plotted the same equivalent distance on a map.
Heading towards Taizé.
Taizé. Yeah. So I went from down through Guildford and to Canterbury, to the Dover, across the Channel, and then down through the Pas de Calais and Champagne and into Burgundy. And just went online and found pictures of the... this sort of locality that I would be going through. Some of the places I'd been to in the past, but many I hadn't. But you can, with a bit of imagination, you can find all these places, and then just explore spiritual themes and as I went along as well, and within the family, I didn't actually put that one on a website, but I just within the family, because I did it a bit experimentally.
Yeah.
But people took an interest in that and chipped in with their own comments. And my brother, who lives down in that part of the world, he insisted that I stop with him overnight on virtually.
And have a virtual visit with a virtual meal. And,
yeah, but at the end of it, my older brother, I've got two brothers, the elder one said, well, how did you get back? You know, and I said, I chartered a private plane, a jet from, because we near Farnborough Air, where we live, Farnborough Airport, it's right close to. I said, I couldn't be bothered to cycle back. He said, well, that's not very environmentally friendly, you know. So I got my head in my hands at the end of the pilgrimage through taking a private jet. So that's good fun. You know, there are those elements to it as well. It doesn't have to be all worthy and spiritual. It
can a little bit of fun.
A bit of fun on the way as well. Yeah.
And so you've gone on then to develop some other a website with other virtual pilgrimages that people can then experience with you. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, I did have this other site. I've got a friend. I mean, I apart from switching it on and off, I don't know an awful lot about computers at all. But I've got a friend who was the IT lead for the Bible Society.
Okay.
Until he retired.
Friends with skills.
Yeah, absolutely. And he helped me develop a website called Treacle Abbey. And I'm not going to, it's more than I can explain at the moment, but there's a reason that it's called that. And that's where we started in lockdown, and we had a real little community, 30 odd people. We did virtual pilgrimages to while away the lockdown.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you gathered a virtual, like an online community,
yes,
of like
yeah.
real people.
Yeah.
And you went on virtual pilgrimages.
We did them real time
yeah.
and on WhatsApp.
Amazing.
Yeah. So they're all available online. So I can point you to the links.
Yeah.
So we either did real time pilgrimages, like we did one to Lindisfarne, or the one to from Padstow to Foy in the West Country. But also we did a Cayley pilgrimage. Do you know the term?
Yeah, but maybe for the listeners, tell them what that
yeah.
is.
Yeah, so. Well, it's a musical type festival.
Yeah.
You know, as sometimes it seems more like just a barn dance, but you can have other artistic expressions within it. I think it's Gaelic or Gaelic type phrase. So we just had a there was a verse of scripture that we were exploring. I'm just going to embarrass myself now about bringing a song and a tambourine or something. This is probably as close as I can get. So we just within that little community, we said, I went to such and such a place and the most amazing painting of, Holman Hunt, or somebody had been to Leicester Cathedral where there's some magnificent, more modern artwork after it had been bombed. So that you could bring all of that sort of story into it as well. And then it led to reflections on, what it would mean to be creative, which of course with the order of the mustard seed, you just suddenly realize just how important creativity is in the Christian experience. Mm-hmm. So
you've done virtual pilgrimages in yeah. real time with a group, and then out of that, you've created sort of online pilgrimages that people can access through your website.
Yeah.
And then you're talking about one that you've got coming up. So tell me what you're cooking up and thinking about.
Yeah. Well, with the Treacle Abbey, it's great fun, and, but it was a little bit too quirky, I think, for wider consumption. Well, it may be that we can revisit that at some time, but we've renamed it the Pilgrimage of the Word.
Yeah.
So the important thing is certainly go on a pilgrimage, but it's got to be Christian focused. Mm-hmm. It's a bit like Lectio in a way,
mm-hmm.
very much like Lectio, where you're making a journey through the scripture. So we've now got this Pilgrimage of the Word site, and encouraged to go on a wayfaring pilgrimage, which is where you trolley around, for 2 or 3 days or more. Locality one, where you have a day out.
In your locality. Yeah.
And we did one, for example, from Winchester to St. Cross. That would be a good example. You do a domestic one where you just use your house. You progress through your house, so you are having the change of location, or you have this virtual one where if you, for whatever reason, you don't have a house, or you haven't got the money to go on holiday, or your disability or whatever, then you can do it virtually. And it may be that you every time you walk the children to school, you clock how far you've gone, and you put that towards an actual journey online. Or you think, I'm wheelchair bound, I'm not going anywhere. So you just you do it completely virtually.
Yeah.
But you can still, with imagination and help, you can still generate a sense of travel and purpose. And I'm not inventing something new. There is loads of this sort of on the internet. And there was anciently as well, in the medieval times, people who couldn't afford to go on pilgrimages, or it was too dangerous because of, Saracens at, in the Holy Land or something, then they would commit to go 10 times round a pilgrim route in a cathedral or something like that. And they would, they would facilitate that with shrines and stations of the cross and all the rest of it. So I'm just, online, just trying to introduce more people into this existing forum that I have personally found really helpful and want to share.
Wonderful. So just as we're closing, tell me, if you were to say in just a couple of sentences, why should I go on a pilgrimage, whether it's virtual or not, what's the benefit, what's the opportunity or the invitation of a pilgrimage?
That brings you right to the first, the holy longing. There's got to be an itch that you want to scratch, that you, if you think, oh, I want to go on a pilgrimage, let's think of something, well, fine, but there really needs to be something that's bothering you. It could be, what does it mean when you say, my burden is life? Come unto me, you who are heavy laden, my burden is light. And then you think, no, it's not. It's blooming hard work, you know. So how does that tie in with take up your cross and follow me?
Yeah.
You know, they seem to be contradictory. How do you so maybe you're struggling with that sort of thought. What you need to do is go on a pilgrimage, which implies that you're taking time out from your normal routines to explore that. It only really works, in my experience, if there's something bothering you that makes you want to go on pilgrimage.
Yeah.
And then when you begin to get some ideas, then you take it to God in prayer, the prayer for arrival, and then how do I share this or, you know, express it in my life? You know, the that in Psalm 46, it says, be still and know that I am God.
Mm-hmm.
In the Latin version, the be still comes from the word that we get vacation from.
Okay.
So I often think, go on a holiday and know that I am God is my free translation of that verse. And I think the word holiday actually means holy day, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, have a holiday and know that God is God. But I think it's just that divine prompt that turns it from a holiday, which is absolutely fine. I love my holidays, but every now and then I do like to go on a pilgrimage.
Mm, beautiful. Well, could you maybe pray for the listeners as they're thinking about maybe they want to go on a pilgrimage, maybe they have got this divine discontent, this itch, you know, that yeah. needs scratching. Maybe they're in circumstances that make it difficult to get out there to do something, and they could go on an inward journey or virtual journey. Can you maybe just pray for them?
Heavenly Father, I would start by acknowledging your love and grace that's enabled me to be in this place and having this conversation. So through your power and the prompting that you've given other people to help me, I just freely acknowledge the power of it in my life. And I would just want to share that. And I would pray for all those who would perhaps have a yearning of their own, that they would be able to express it either through a physical pilgrimage or perhaps a virtual one, which may be their option due to all sorts of reasons. Lord, I pray for all those that are in the order of the mustard seed, that they would be blessed on on their continuing journey. For those who are preparing to become part of the order, I pray for all people who just are on a journey of some kind, that it would be a journey that led into your heart out of the heart of darkness. In Jesus' name, amen.
thank you so much for joining us for this episode of the Order of the Mustard Seed podcast. For more information about the Order, you can find us at orderofthemustardseed.com or on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. May God grant us grace as we follow His invitations to be true and to be kind and to go.